Girls had a distinct sound all their own, a sound that will never grow old and will always be appreciated by fans throughout the world. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to introduce alphabetically Albeth and Cheryl of the Paris Sisters. What a thrill it is to have you doing this show with me.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much, Ronnie.
We're happy to be able to get together and do this.
You know, your songs have a certain sound to them that is unmistakable. It's kind of a very unique sound.
I think we were known kind of as the beginning of the soft sound.
You've been described as sultry, sensual, soft, all the S's.
That's great. Is this before they met us?
I guess. I don't know. The interesting thing about the Paris Sisters is that you didn't start out as singers initially. You started out as dancers.
In fact, this is Albeth. I'm the oldest. I remember beginning dance classes. It was a studio in San Francisco called Betty May Studios.
Right.
And I was about 3 and a half. I have pictures of me in little tutus. And as each sister came along, they automatically were enrolled in dance school. And that's what we were. We were a dance team, the three of us.
Let's mention, of course, Priscilla.
Priscilla, yes.
Priscilla was the youngest of the three of you, right?
Right, she was called the baby.
Yeah, she will always be the baby sister. And there's a wonderful picture of the three of us tap dancing in little velvet short costumes. And I remember the night, I'm sure you do too, Cheryl. We were very young. Priscilla couldn't have been more than 5 or 6 years old. But she was responsible for getting her tap shoes together, and we had identical costumes. We were playing, like, for the Elks Club or something like that, and Priscilla brought the wrong color tap shoes. Black.
Right.
That was always Priscilla.
She was always a little bit out of step. Right.
Yeah. Well. She brought the white shoes, and I remember that Mother was a little upset with that. It's a wonderful picture on one of our CDs, and our dad is actually sitting there with some of the audience. You can see him.
At the Betty May School, you didn't just do tap dancing, though. You did other types of dancing as well, didn't you?
Like, oh, we did everything. We did acrobatics.
Ballet?
Ballet.
Can-can?
Oh, the can-can. That was very difficult.
And, of course, the legendary tarantella.
Yeah, tarantella. That's
the
right.
The Sicilian tarantella with the tambourines.
Right.
Oh, we did Hawaiian. We worked with the gourds, the feathered gourds. And we did Ragtime Cowboy Joe. And had to learn to twirl guns. I remember I missed mine and got a black eye.
Oh, no.
It was fun. We rehearsed every single night of our lives growing up in our living room. Dad made a tap board, and that's where we danced, and eventually around the piano sang.
Exactly. And you know what, Ronnie? We thought this was a normal way of life. It didn't occur to us that, you know, what we might be giving up or missing or whatever. And so if you don't know it, you know, it was perfectly normal to us to come home and rehearse and tap dance every night.
You started getting into singing, and ultimately you, Albeth, became the alto. Albeth, alto?
Alto, Albeth.
I thought I was the alto.
Now, wait a minute. Hold on a
second.
For
the bass, Cheryl.
Cheryl's fooling the DJ here. Cheryl, you were the bass singer, Cheryl, right?
I was the bass, yes.
Now, you told me something off the air the other night. You said that Priscilla basically became the lead singer because she really wasn't into harmonizing that much. Is that correct?
She was pretty young, as we were, but we started out doing dance troops, you know, Camp Pendleton out in California and different Air Force bases. And they said, well, we've got too many dancers. We need singers.
Okay.
So my mom, of course, a little bit like probably a Zsa Zsa Gabor type of personality.
Well, she was the Mama Rose, for sure.
Wait a minute.
Right.
Your mom was named Faye?
Yes.
And I understand, I just researched this, and she had been a soprano, coloratura soprano with the Metropolitan Opera Company in San Francisco?
Right.
Wow. So,
when she said, "My girls can sing," she just turned it around and within a couple of days had us singing, but we sang in unison. And then when we started to fall into harmonies with a teacher, Priscilla couldn't harmonize. She could only sing melody.
So she had to become the lead singer that way. Initially, though, when you were singing in unison, you were kind of like the Andrews sisters. In fact, you met the Andrews sisters, I believe.
This is Albeth. The Andrews actually played a big part in the inception of our professional career. We used to listen to many of the girl groups so that we could learn the harmony parts, the third and the fifth, up from the lead, and then you would be a third and a fifth above or below that. And we learned many of the Andrews sisters' songs, Rum and Coca-Cola, Pennsylvania Polka. The Andrews were playing. My dad somehow knew the act that was on the show with them. That act suggested that Dad bring the three of us down to see. He could get us into the theater, and we took off from school, and we went down there dressed alike, as we always did. We had seats in the front, and they saw us sitting there for a couple of shows in a row. A
couple of days in a row.
Wow.
Well,
yeah.
We were ecstatic. They were intrigued. So after they came out and saw us there again, they invited us backstage. I still, to this day, remember the warmth of that room back there.
Going backstage.
What a thrill that must have been.
They were huge stars.
They were the biggest singing stars in the world in terms of the group at that time.
They couldn't have been nicer.
Oh, well.
Patty was the youngest. She sang lead. And then she asked us if we'd like to watch the show from the wings. We stood in the wings in awe watching them. And Mother was out in the audience. I think Dad was at work. And she stops the orchestra, Patty. And she says, "We have three girls, and the wings are about our age we were when we began singing. And I'll bet if we applauded, they'd come out and do a number." Now, we were totally...
Oh, my goodness.
But we walked out there, and I told the orchestra what we would be doing. We did a couple of the Andrews numbers, and my mother came up from the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And she
went
sat down at the piano.
To the
piano player got up and let her have it because she had been rehearsing with us. She taught herself to play piano, and she had been our conductor, so to speak, in our accompanist.
So she played the piano, and the band just followed her lead, kind of.
And we did those couple of numbers, and we got a marvelous reception. And the interesting thing was there were agents from MCA,
mm-hmm.
was the big major agency then, in the audience, and they actually signed us to MCA. That's how we turned professional, because by signing with an agency, then we began getting paid for the jobs we were doing.
Right. Then we had to join the union, AGVA.
Right. It was AGVA then. And we really sharpened our talent and our skills by playing up and down the fair circuit. Played a lot of fairs that first year. We were so very young.
You certainly were getting a lot of professional experience long before you had your first hit recording.
That's
many years.
So that was a very good thing, because some people who have hit records aren't even ready for them as far as performing are concerned. So you basically got a lot of experience. That was a great thing. Your initial recordings on Decca Records, we should point out that they were recordings such as Daughter Daughter and Huckleberry Pie and something called Ooh La La. And you didn't sound like the Paris sisters back then. You sounded more like the Andrews sisters, I think.
Tried to make us emulate the Andrews sisters. And that's what we had to follow in those days. So our initial sound was the three-part harmonies, very strong, that particular harmony of that time.
I want to interject something that I don't get a chance to mention very often. Those were different days. It was the most exciting experience to go into the studio. Decca was right next to Paramount Studios on Melrose. And sing live in the studio with an orchestra that had Maynard Ferguson, Pete Condoli, Glenn Campbell.
Well, and Glenn Campbell at that time was playing guitar.
He was trying to
at
break
one of the record sessions sold us one of his guitars, an old Martin guitar, which I picked up, and to this day I still have.
That's right.
Yeah,
and
still have it, and
very well.
Even played it some on stage. But once you started working with big orchestras, you know, in those days you didn't accompany yourself.
Right.
Let the band do it.
Those were the beginnings, and pretty impressive beginnings. Ultimately, you met a gentleman by the name of Lester Sill, who apparently was looking for some new and promising recording acts, and I think that kind of led you to meeting Phil Spector. Is that correct?
Actually, it's our mom. Once again, she brought us all down to Los Angeles. We originally are from San Francisco and the Bay Area. We had worked in the Bay Area a great deal. And mom just knocked on doors and made a contact with Lester Sill and said she had a trio. And then Phil Spector came out to our home. We eventually moved down to Los Angeles. And he sat on the front steps and just talked with us for a long time. He was a very sweet young man at that time. He had already had much success himself with the Teddy Bears.
To Know Him Is to Love Him from
1958.
My understanding is that, I mean, when you listen to the sound of Be My Boy, which is the first one we're going to play, that has kind of a similar sound to Know Him Is to Love Him. It's nice and soft and sweet.
You're
and
right.
Slow.
Right. That's it. He had two titles, The Soft Sound,
yes,
and The Wall of Sound.
Totally contrasting sounds, by the way.
Right. He brought his guitar. We sat out on the front steps, and he had us all sing, and he sang to us a little bit, and he was looking for a sound. He knew exactly what he wanted. He knew.
It turns out
that Lester Sill had said to him, you go out, we're going to send you to some artists. You tell us which artists you wish to record, and you go ahead. We're going to let you create it. So that was kind of their way of paying him back, because it turns out Phil did not make a lot of money from his first original hits.
Really?
So, yeah, really.
Well,
a lot of people didn't in those days. But
that's true.
So he kind of sat with us and had each one of us sing, and he wanted a very soft, young sound. Priscilla had the softest, the youngest, and he had all of us do different parts. And that was it. I think we rehearsed a few times, and before we knew it, we were going into Gold Star Studios.
Santa Monica. Very famous. You must have heard of it.
Sure.
They recently tore it down, but so many hits came out of Gold Star. They had a marvelous ability for mixing and getting the right sound.
Yes, they did. Sonny and Cher worked there. The Righteous Brothers worked there. So many people passed through those portals. Now,
Phil Spector had a label, Greg Mark. Did he own the label?
That was Lester's label. Lester Sill and
Lee Hazelwood.
And Lee Hazelwood, and they named it after two sons, I guess, Greg and Mark.
Greg and Mark.
Okay, now we know how that came about. How did Be My Boy come about?
Phil wrote Be My Boy. It was originally called Be My Girl.
Be My Girl, right.
And
oh.
He changed it. He tried us on it. Well, it wasn't a huge Billboard success. It was on the charts, but it was a huge turntable success and very, very big in Los Angeles. And that was the beginning for us.
I love that recording.
Thank you.
Yes, I do too.
That was kind of the opening act for the next one. The next recording became a much bigger hit. It was a top 10 recording, I Love How You Love Me. And what can you tell me about that?
Do you want to talk, Al?
No, you're doing fine.
Just flip a coin, you know.
Well, I'll just start a little of it. I Love How You Love Me had been done many years before by the Drifters.
I never knew
that.
Had
done it in a fast pace.
Really? I never knew the Drifters recorded that.
No, I never did either, so I think Cheryl's making this up.
Maybe.
Oh, I'll bet I will stake my yellow lab on it. So.
I think you're thinking of Be My Boy. It doesn't matter.
No, Al, I Love How You Love Me, too, because that was to be the B-side, and All Through the Night was to be the A-side.
But at any rate, so it's possible that the Drifters may have done it. We're not sure.
Okay.
I Love How You Love Me was written by Mann and Kolber.
Right.
Is that Barry Mann?
Right.
Barry Mann and...
Did he put the bump in the bump, 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 or he just sang about it? Who put the bump? That was his hit, Barry.
That was his
yeah.
hit. I don't know
well,
if
he had
written
quite a
that
few.
One or not.
It was Larry Kolber, I believe.
Larry Kolber, but it was Barry Mann. And what was your opinion when you first heard I Love How You Love Me? Did you say, oh, this is a great song? Or?
From my take on it, it was just a song. We had all loved Be My Boy, and I Love How You Love Me was to be kind of the follow-up, but... Not really. From what I recall, when we went into the studio, All Through the Night was the song they were going to push. Do you remember it that way, Albert?
Yes, I think
right.
that
and,
was going to
and
be
the And that's
the
A-side. One they gave all the attention to.
So why don't we listen to the A-side right now, and then we will flip it over. These are the Parris Sisters and All Through the Night. That was All Through the Night by the Parris Sisters, quite different from most of their other recordings. And that was supposed to be the follow-up to Be My Boy. Well, it was the follow-up, but it was supposed to be the hit side.
Right.
But as you and I know, strange things sometimes happen, and sometimes it takes a disc jockey or a combination of DJs to flip over a record. Was there one particular DJ who flipped over this particular recording and started playing the other side?
We think it was Bill Balance, was one of the DJs in San Francisco, which had been our home, flipped it over to hear the other side. And then another disc jockey, I've been told this and I worked with him, it was a disc jockey named Rod Roddy, and he was Boston. And he liked I Love How You Love Me.
Rod Roddy, I know the name Rod Roddy. Was he eventually on The Price is Right as an announcer? Was it
yes.
the same Rod Roddy?
Rod Roddy replaced... Johnny
Olson. Yeah, that's where I know the name Rod Roddy.
I'll only go briefly because it's kind of a separate career, but I ended up working on The Price is Right for many years after the days of singing were over with. And one night Rod Roddy and I went to dinner, and he told me about his beginning as a disc jockey.
And
had no idea that I had been the singer or one of the Harris sisters, and we were friends up until the very end, until he passed.
Yes.
And it seems to me that there, and I don't remember who the DJs were, but in Philadelphia and Pittsburgh back in those days, we had a couple of DJs that also began playing it
right
constantly.
We're going to listen to it right now, and this is the biggest recording that you ever had, and I guess the one that kind of changed your lives in many, many respects. The Paris Sisters and I Love How You Love Me.
I love how your eyes close whenever you kiss me, and when I'm away from you, I love how you miss me. I love the way you always treat me tenderly.
I Love How You Love Me by the Paris Sisters. And I'm Ronnie Allen, so pleased to be talking with, and I'm going to alternate which name I put first. I'm talking with Cheryl and Albeth of the Paris Sisters. This was the follow-up to I Love How You Love Me. He knows I love him too much.
Well, I thought this was a marvelous song. I think we all did. And it gave Priscilla a little more of a chance to emote. And I was very surprised, I'm sure everybody was, that it didn't become a big chart. I mean, it was on the charts, but I honestly believe that that was going to be a great follow-up to I Love How You Love Me.
The songwriters were a couple of struggling people by the names of Goffin and King.
Right.
I think it's such a pretty song.
And we all loved that song. There was litigation going on between Phil Spector and Lester Sill, and I think we were kind of caught in the middle of it. Shortly after I Love How You Love Me. So a lot of things came to a standstill, and they didn't get the attention. And I have a feeling that He Knows I Love Him Too Much was kind of caught in the crossfire.
This is He Knows I Love Him Too Much, Goffin King composition, sung beautifully by the Paris Sisters.
Forgive, 'cause I couldn't live without him.
Much by the Parris Sisters. The flip side of that recording was written by the same folks who brought you Be My Boy, namely Spector and Sands. Well, who is Sands, by the way? I know who Spector is, but who is Sands? It was his co-writer.
I don't remember it all.
I don't recall. What was? Are you saying Sam?
No, Sands, S-A-N-D-S, as in desert sands.
I see.
But the name doesn't ring a bell.
You know what? That's the first I've heard of them.
I'm just reading from the writers that are listed here. At any rate, the song called A Lonely Girl's Prayer was the flip side of...
Oh, my, yes.
That was another good one.
Yeah.
I liked that. I thought Priscilla did a great job on that one.
The only Sands I remember from that era was Tommy Sands.
Right, and I don't think it was Tommy. I don't believe Tommy had anything to do with writing this one.
I think you're right.
But what a pretty song. And
one of us needs to research that, so I elect you, Ronnie.
I will absolutely be up to the task, I promise.
Good.
And in the meantime, let's listen to it right now. This was the flip side of He Knows I Love Him Too Much. This is A Lonely Girl's Prayer.
Is a simple prayer for someone to share her heart, someone to
girl's prayer, and that's the Parra sisters, namely Priscilla and Cheryl and Albeth. I will tell you, as I listen to these songs, as far as I'm concerned, all of these recordings had like two A sides. Later on, Phil Spector decided on a different tack. He was concerned that disc jockeys would not know which side to play, so he started putting, I believe, instrumentals on the flip side. So that disc jockeys would not, you know, play the wrong side. Like on the Crystals recordings, the flip side might have been BB and Susu or something like that, an instrumental.
Right.
But as far as the Parra sisters were concerned, no, it's just a couple of great sides.
Thanks.
And then let's just flip a coin, you know, and which one are we going to play? But Let Me Be the One is one that did make the chart. And again, it continued the very unique sound that the three of you had. And I'll ask Cheryl your thoughts on Let Me Be the One.
It was definitely a girl's song. In those days, they were featuring records that they thought the girls, young girl teenagers, were the buyers.
Right.
That's who they were, you know, targeting at that time. And Let Me Be the One, that's every girl's dream, a love or a boyfriend, or she wants to be the one. And that song really said it all. And I would use that song right now today. It could still apply right now.
And even the sound, you know, Ronnie, when I think of my youngest sister's sound, it really was an incredible sound. And I'm sure you will agree, the
yes.
emotion that she poured into the songs. You could feel sadness, you could feel naivete, you could feel an ingenuous quality. That's how I still feel when I hear Priscilla's voice on those tracks.
Let me be the one to always love you. Let me be the one to take care.
Sisters.
Ronnie, you've mentioned about our sound, soft, the blend.
Yeah.
People don't usually think about it. When we split up and Priscilla went out to do a single, as she desperately wanted to do, we auditioned other girls. We practiced and rehearsed with other girls. We couldn't find anyone that could create that same sound, that blend, because it came from being sisters.
Right.
And our phrasing was the same. The way we took a breath was the same.
I told Ronnie when we talked earlier that we would sit together with our backs to each other and could phrase and breathe the same. That's how we would rehearse.
And then when we hadn't sung together for many years, and Priscilla came in from one of her trips because she was living in France for a long time, and we sat down to sing something, it all came back. We knew exactly what that blend should be. There are very fine nuances with creating that. That's what you're referring to when you talk about it.
Right.
I had to say the four tops or the four coins or the ink spots or
right.
the four freshmen. They could replace any one of those, maybe not the lead voice, but they sang harmonies.
Exactly,
and,
right.
And there have been a lot of replacements of those groups as they become oldies touring groups,
right.
and they still have basically the same sound. But the way we were recorded, we couldn't find anybody.
Well, think of it, Al. Not one of the sister groups that we knew, starting from Dinning, Andrew, McGuire, Lennon. Well, we didn't know the Dinning, but we knew the later ones. And they never had a replacement. The group separated, the sisters broke up or either got married or had children. They never replaced it with another voice. It's not possible.
I have to say this as I am walking down memory lane and reminiscing about your career, which is a wonderful career, and enjoying these recordings. These songs were written by the heavyweights of the business, the cream of the crop, people like Barry Mann, Jerry Goffin, Carole King, Phil Spector, and this next one is a collaborative effort of Doc Pomus and Phil Spector. Pomus used to write with Mort Schumann, but occasionally he wrote with other people, and he and Phil got together and wrote a great song called What Am I to Do? And I have found that constantly, I mean, I've listened to your recordings so many times, and this is one that, in addition to Be My Boy and I Love How You Love Me, as much as any of the other ones, this one just stands out. What Am I to Do? It is just such a haunting sound.
I agree with that.
If there's a kind of a common thread to all of the songs recorded by the Paris sisters, based upon the ones I'm playing this evening, which are the singles, they dealt with emotions. They dealt with life.
That's right.
And the songs were uniformly good.
Well, thank you.
I know. I'm saying, yeah, I wish you were in the studio here right now, and then you could see my body language, and I could point to you, and I could say, okay, make
well,
a comment
it's,
now.
It's one day soon, hopefully in our lifetime, we will have video phones. I mean, they do already.
I understand that a staged performance of this particular song, What Am I to Do, was included in a big screen feature film that was released in England as It's Trad Dad. And in the United States, it was released as Ring-a-Ding Rhythm. Were you aware of that?
That's right.
Oh, good. I'm glad it's right.
I actually have a copy of that.
They actually showed you performing that song somewhere?
Yes, it was supposed to be in a nightclub. It was a nightclub scene. We never had any spoken lines. A film that Chubby Checker was in, and he was the one that they were promoting the most at that time. They had a nightclub scene, and they had a number of different recording artists from that particular era that appeared in various scenes.
I walk along the streets we used to know, and go to every place we used to go. With love.
To do. I'm Ronnie Allen, and I'm so happy to have on the phone with me Albeth and Cheryl of the Parris Sisters. We're going to skip ahead to some recordings that you did a little bit later on in your career. One of them was a remake of Sincerely. A lot of people remember it was a hit by the McGuire Sisters, but before the McGuire Sisters did it, the Moonglows did it. You did your own take on Sincerely, and again, in the Parris Sisters style.
That was closer to what our stage sound was like.
Right, right, it was. It was probably easier. That was the three-part harmony.
Did you try to, in your recording of Sincerely, emulate the McGuire Sisters? Because I'm sure you were familiar with the McGuire Sisters' recording of it.
I wouldn't say we tried to emulate them. We had met them in Vegas when they were at a peak time, and we would sit, and they taught us how to do makeup.
Okay.
Sat in the dressing room after meeting the McGuire Sisters.
Right.
And we watched them. We were in awe, and we watched how they made up, and we copied that.
What label was that on, Ron?
That was on Reprise.
Reprise. Yeah, Jimmy Bowen was our producer.
Right.
Jimmy Bowen. I'm sticking with you. Jimmy Bowen of the Rhythm Orchids, along with Buddy Knox. One thing I want to mention about Sincerely is that the song was co-written by Harvey Fuqua, the lead singer of the Moonglows, and DJ Alan Freed.
Oh, my.
Oh, yes, Alan.
Yeah. A great rendition right now by the Parris Sisters. Priscilla Parris wrote a few of the songs that you recorded, and we haven't played any of them until this one. And this one is called My Good Friend. Every time I've heard this, I've always said to myself, what a great lyric that is.
Yes, and a different sound from Priscilla.
Yes.
Totally different. This was
sound,
up-tempo. This was not the typical Paris Sister sound.
No, but that was a dynamite song. That was one of my favorites, My Good Friend.
Before you've heard the song, My Good Friend, you're thinking the terms, oh, that's a very, very positive thought. My Good Friend, you know, that's very positive. When you listen to the song, there's kind of a disappointment about being my good friend.
That's right. The twist of that is there's probably many people who have a good friend, a male-female relationship.
But they want more.
And one of them wants it to be more.
Yes. But to express it the way Priscilla expressed it to me is masterful. These are the Paris Sisters in a song written by Priscilla called My Good Friend.
You're always there for me to turn to. You'd rush right over if I needed you to. You say you'll take care of me and that someday someone will love me. Oh yes, you're such a good friend. It's too bad I love you, my good friend. You call me up whenever you are down. You say you're glad someone like me is around. You tell me all your needs and you wish more girls were just like me. Oh yes, you're such a good friend. It's too bad I love you, my good friend. When people hurt me so, yet you don't realize you're hurting me most. Maybe someday you'll love me, but until then I guess we'll just be good friends. Oh yes, such good friends. But I still will love you, my good friend.
That was My Good Friend by the Paris Sisters. And once again, let me just say a quick thank you. I'll make it a quick thank you because we're going to move on. But I'm so appreciative of the two of you doing this with me and allowing us to be in on the secrets behind some of these songs. Appreciate it so much. Thank you, thank you.
Well, you've brought back a lot of good memories to us as well.
Absolutely, Ronnie. I'm enjoying it.
It's My Party, of course, is indelibly associated with Leslie Gore.
Right.
And it would have been very easy for you to, if you were going to record It's My Party, to do it like Leslie Gore, but you absolutely did It's My Party totally unlike Leslie Gore. How did that come about that you did such a soft, slow rendition of It's My Party?
I don't know, Al. Would you
what
have
was that label?
To that?
Ronnie?
Oh, the label?
They kind of took a different twist to it.
Reprise. That was
Reprise. That was Reprise.
We flip side of My Good Friend.
Right.
I can't
flip side of My Good Friend.
I have a feeling that Priscilla suggested it be done that way.
I've not heard that particular song, Ronnie, in quite a long time, but I do know we did a different rendition.
It's my party and I'll cry if I wanna, cry if I wanna, I'll cry if I wanna. You would cry too if it happened to you.
You would cry too.
Nobody knows where my Johnny has gone, but Judy left the same time. Cry if I want.
This has just been so enjoyable for me, and my pleasure to present your wonderful career to everybody in the world and introduce many people to songs that they are not familiar with by you. And
we appreciate it, too. It is a trip down memory lane, and it's fun to remember all of those terrific times in the music business.
Is there an official Paris Sisters website?
There is.
Yes, there is.
ParisSisters.com. That's our website. But you have seen the one by Terry Johnson. He is a true fan. Had about 15 pages on us.
If you Google it, you will definitely find his fan page tribute to Priscilla, Cheryl, and Albeth. If you want to go to the official Paris Sisters website, it is, drumroll, www.theparissisters.com. And I think you need the, right? Never did I ever think that the word the was going to become so important, but in the internet age, it is very important. I'm going to give each of you a moment to just express any closing thought you want. Albeth, if there's anything you want to say about anything that I have not asked, you have the floor for the next few seconds.
There really were four of us, because our mother impacted our careers in the most positive way. She had a dream for us, and she never let go of that. She did everything she could to help us achieve our own recognition. And we've got so many pictures of the three of us with Mom. She's gone now, and sadly, Priscilla is gone also. She passed away in Paris, and we miss her terribly. But we do have her two sons. They're very much a part of our family, and they are a fabulous young man. And we have the sound of her voice is an eternal legacy. That's how I feel.
Cheryl?
Oh, Albeth has really verbalized it so very well. I think we were lucky. I know sisters and brothers don't realize what they have when they're growing up, and sometimes they go in separate directions. We were kept together for many, many, many years, and at times we all wanted to run away in different directions. But when we look back on it, it was a marvelous way to share and spend your early years and on through life. It's something that we're close as sisters, but we're also close as friends, and all that we went through and all of the memories.
Mm-hmm.
And I can only add, I was probably the last to spend time with Priscilla a month in Paris. I miss her every day of my life. I think of her, and hearing her tonight it's really reached me, Ronnie, but it was a great interview. Thank you.
Thanks, Ronnie.
Every night I hope and pray a dream lover will come my way. Oh, put a hope in my arms and know the magic of his charms, because I want a boy.
Show's over, and I have to tell you that this was such an incredible experience for me putting it together. Albeth and Cheryl are such nice, wonderful, gracious people. I wish them all the joys of life. I love their music. I'm going to play a couple of bonus tracks for you right now. This first one is one that Cheryl said, "Ronnie, please don't play this one during the show, because it really doesn't reflect what we really sounded like during our career. It actually reflects what they sounded like back in the 50s when they were singing kind of like the Andrews Sisters." I thought you'd enjoy hearing it, though, so I'm going to include it as a bonus track. It's not in the show, Cheryl. This is a bonus track. And this one is called Huckleberry Pie.
Ain't you huckleberry, you buckle, huckleberry, berry pie. Ain't you buckleberry, you buckle, ain't you buckle, aye. Ain't you buckleberry, you buckle, huckleberry pie. Ain't you buckleberry, you buckle, ain't you buckle, aye. Ain't you buckleberry, you buckle, huckleberry pie. The teacher asked Johnny, what he'd like to be, a doctor, a lawyer, sailor on the sea. He said a baker, you know the reason why, so he can bake a million huckleberry pies. Ain't you buckleberry, you buckle, ain't you buckle, aye. Ain't you buckleberry, you buckle, huckleberry pie. Ate your buckle, be your buckle, ate your buckle, aye. Ate your buckle, be your buckle, huckleberry pie. Sitting on a porch swing, cutting my bow. He said, there's something I gotta know. I wanna pop the question before we say goodbye. But honey, can you bake the huckleberry pie? Ate your buckle, be your buckle, ate your buckle, aye. Ate your buckle, be your buckle, huckleberry pie. Ate your buckle, be your buckle, ate your buckle, aye. Ate your buckle, be your buckle, huckleberry pie. Know the score, can't get a settle to knock on the door. The boys come to my house, wonder why, they ought to see you meet my berry pie.
Ain't you huckleberry, you buckle, huckleberry, berry pie.
Ah, ah, berry pie, ah, ah, berry pie. A neighbor brought me her son's to keep, I thought the rascal was a thief. I looked for him all over the place, found him in the kitchen with my eyes face. Ain't you buckle, be a buckle, ain't you buckle, aye. Ain't you buckle, be a buckle, huckleberry pie. Ain't you buckle, be a buckle, ain't you buckle, aye. Ain't you buckle, be a buckle, huckleberry pie. Ah, berry pie. Ah, berry pie. Huckleberry pie.
And finally, another Goffin King song, and it's a great one. These are the Parra Sisters and Some of Your Lovin'.
You gotta give me some of your lovin'. You gotta give me some. I'm not a greedy girl. I don't need the world. Just give me some of your love. Oh, now I don't expect you to guarantee your pleasure.